All right, let's go back to the 20th chapter of Luke. Right after Jesus gave the parable of the vineyard, or should I say the parable that contains a certain man who planted a vineyard and the husbandmen and their responsibility, what they were supposed to do to the owner's vineyard while he was away in a far country. And instead of doing what they were instructed to do to the vineyard that was granted to them, along with the responsibility, they took it upon themselves to fail to fulfill the obligation of giving the fruit back to the owner. The fruit of the vineyard belonged to the owner. It didn't belong to the husbandman. It didn't belong to the tenants. The fruit belonged to the owner. But the husbandmen or the tenants decided that they didn't want to give the fruit to the owner, but to keep it for themselves. And so at the end of the season, the landowner sent his servants to the husbandmen or the tenants to collect the fruit that was due. And instead of giving the owner what was rightfully his, they in turn abused and beat the servants. And then the landowner decided to send his son to collect what was rightfully his, simply stating that they would reverence his son in the same manner that they reverence him. But instead of that, they killed him with the intent to take the inheritance that belonged to the landowner. And all of this was a parable that was speaking specifically to and about the religious leaders, the scribes, the Pharisees, the chief priests, and the elders, the delegation that was sent from the Sanhedrin to question the authority that Jesus exercised in the cleaning out of the temple and the role of chief speaker in that temple. Jesus made it clear that the house of God was his and his father's. It was a house of prayer. It wasn't a house of merchandise. And they wanted to know what authority he had to literally clean out the temple and to restore it to some degree to the purpose for which God gave it. And after he gives this parable, of course, the conclusion of it is, what will the landowner do to those husbandmen that killed his son? The answer is that he would kill them and give the land to other husbandmen or other tenants who would bring forth the fruit in its due season. And of course, these religious leaders, recognizing that the parable spoke to and about them, said, "God forbid." And as they said, "God forbid," the implication is, no, that can't happen. Then he questioned them in verse 17. Well, what is this then that is written? The stone which the builders rejected, the same has become the head of the corner. Now, they knew exactly what the Lord said when he said that. He was calling himself, of course, the stone, and he was calling them the rejected builders. And they knew that Old Testament reference was referring to the fact that Israel was in apostasy against God. They knew that. And so he was once again reminding them that they were nowhere God's men at all. We also made reference to David also being a rejected stone, in the sense that this imagery does come from Psalm 118. Saul rejected David. David was a rejected stone. Saul tried to have him killed on a number of occasions, but the Lord exalted David from his humiliation to the throne. Everything was a work of God to fulfill the very plan that God had for his own son, whom the religious leaders tried to kill in this chapter before and after this chapter, but at this time period. Then we looked at Peter, who also used the expression in 1 Peter chapter 2, the first 8 verses, talking about salvation. Then the Lord in verse 18 of Luke 20, speaking directly to the Pharisees who rejected the notion that the landowner would come and kill those unfaithful husbandmen. He made it very clear that he's the stone, and if you fall upon him, you'll be crushed, you'll be broken. But if the stone falls upon you, you'll be grinded to powder. And that's judgment. One is brokenness, it's mercy, not judgment. The second one is judgment and not mercy. And the response of the delegation in verse 19 was that at that same hour, that same moment, they wanted to try to seize him at that very moment. The same hour is a specific period of time, an immediate period of time. They wanted to get him. They feared the people. They didn't have an opportunity to do it. And so what they did in this desire to want to seize Jesus was to fulfill the very situation they had been warned about. And we talked about in closing a dramatic example of God's poetic justice. God in the scriptures foretells this very event, and these men, prompted by hatred, rush to bring it to pass, not only upon them, but also upon the nation, which is exactly what would happen. He tells them exactly the kinds of people they are, and then they go about to prove it instantly. And so what was the solution? Well, they kept watching him, verse 20. They kept on watching him and sent forth spies. Now, this is, I read this passage and I'm always responding in the same way. It's astonishing to me. They sent forth spies which should feign themselves just men or righteous men, that they may take hold of his words, that so they might deliver him unto the power and authority of the governor. They watched him, this corrupt group represented by the Sanhedrin, and then they sent forth spies. They were so desperate to capture and to kill Jesus that they devised a scheme of sending forth spies whose job was to continue to watch him, to continue to listen to everything he taught, in particular that, to follow his every move. I believe disguised as disciples, and I think that's what the implication is. They were walking alongside of him. They feigned themselves to be righteous men, and so obviously they were walking alongside of the Lord and his entourage of disciples. They wanted to fit in, to be seen as one of the disciples. But that wasn't the intent, not in a positive sense anyway. They walked alongside him and his disciples, waiting for any opportunity to trap him by his words. The word spies refers to liars in wait who were hired to trap one by crafty words. So that was their intention. That was their intent. Don't tell me this stuff does not go on and has not gone on throughout all of redemptive history. It goes on to this day. The more you are closer to the Lord and closer to the Lord's work and closer to the truth, you're going to get them. They're going to keep coming. They're going to spy out the land. The intent is to corrupt it. Is to take your words and to twist them and to manipulate them. And nothing's changed. The purpose of these religious spies was for the sole purpose of finding something, anything that they could use legally against Christ so that they could bring him before the authorities. That was the whole purpose of sending these spies. They hated him that much, and he did nothing. The Lord said they hated me without a cause. They hated him without a reason. There was no reason for them to be doing what they were doing. So the Sanhedrin knew that Pilate would have to condemn Jesus if he were put to death. They couldn't do it. There was no way that they could administer any kind of Jewish law of stoning to death to the Lord. They couldn't do that. Not to mention it wasn't going to be the Father's plan anyway. And so they couldn't find anything at all to kill Jesus. And I made mention this morning about the uproar that would have happened if they had to seize him at that moment. See, these men and all their smarts were very ignorant, but I give them credit for one thing. They wanted to maintain that their hands were clean. And so instead of actually seizing the Lord themselves and administering the punishment of death by stoning because of blasphemy, what they did was they manipulated the Roman government to try Jesus on the charge actually of making himself a king over Caesar. So therefore, when Pilate gave his verdict for the death of the Lord, the Jewish authorities said, hey, you know, we had nothing to do with this. This was all Rome's idea. So they manipulated everything where in the night and early morning when people weren't really awake and knowing what was going on, by the time they found out what was happening, Jesus was already condemned and already in the process of being crucified. I mean, people were shocked. But the Jews made it look like, or the leadership of the Jews made it look like it was Rome's doing as opposed to their own. But the fact is, it was their own doing. But they manipulated the Roman government in such a fashion where the Jews' hands were clean. This was, hey, he was making himself to be a king. The Romans came against him and they took him. You know, that's how they do that. They set everything in order and then they make sure that they wipe their hands clean of the mess which they started. So they knew again, the Sanhedrin, they knew that Pilate would have to condemn Jesus if he were put to death. And remember, that's the only desire they wanted. They didn't want him in jail. They didn't want him punished. They wanted him dead. So the only way that was going to happen, of course, was that they'd have to get Pilate to do it. And Pilate was weak anyway, so it wouldn't have been much of a problem. The Jewish leadership knew how to manipulate every circumstance, but it's those pesky unintended consequences that got a hold of them. So all of their plans focused on the point, on this point of the goal, or as the goal, that is to kill the Lord. All of this was indeed horrible, but perhaps the way they did it was even more horrifying. These spies feigned themselves just men. To me, that's a remarkable statement in an age where nobody really believes that people do that. And it's right here in the Word. And Paul mentions the same thing. Peter mentions, the passages just keep coming. They all say the same thing. Paul talked about people coming and spying out their liberty in Christ. Who were those people? The Pharisees, law keepers, etc. It's always the same thing. Nothing's changed. I mean, the mess that the early church had to go through to deal with those who feigned themselves to be just men and came into the church and trying to interject Mosaic rituals and baptisms and circumcision into salvation. It never changes. It's the same thing today. The same thing. You got to speak in tongues. You have to do this. You have to do any of that. There's always someone coming along, feigning themselves to be just men, spying out people's liberty, trying to put them under some kind of bondage, trying to dissuade them. And see, when you put people under bondage, you corrupt the entire nature of salvation. That's why it's so hideous to do this. You negate the work of God. This isn't some little issue between, well, you know, we just agree to disagree. I disagree completely because you negate the work of salvation when you do that. When you interject stuff in it, you negate the entire work of salvation. That's how serious this is. But these spies feigned themselves to be just men. Well, who were the spies? Well, they were certain of the Pharisees and of the Herodians, according to Mark 12. And these men were a combination of religious and political hypocrites who disguised themselves as disciples of Jesus for the purpose of trying to get Jesus killed. It's amazing. It's amazing. The religious and political band together to persecute and to destroy Jesus. Now, they were feigning righteousness, but they were workers for the chief priests and the scribes. And this means, of course, that the spies were men who worked with the Sanhedrin Council's blessing. So they were the result of those who came by way of the authority of the Sanhedrin Council. I mean, the whole council was corrupted. They were all corrupt. Everything they did was corrupt. Again, let's look at the players. Pharisees, Herodians, their disciples, chief priests, scribes, elders. I mean, the whole kit and caboodle was involved in this. I mean, all those were parties of the Sanhedrin except the Herodians, which was the political ring of Rome. So you have Rome and Judaism, or the Jews, trying to kill Jesus, trying to find something. I mean, they expended all this energy and time to try to find something, because nothing he was saying was a threat to what they were doing in terms of trying to destroy them. I mean, he wasn't overthrowing Rome. That's incredible. Incredible. All these men were in play, again, with the full blessing of the Sanhedrin Council. The Herodians were a political party that supported the Herodian dynasty. They were pro-Roman, and as such, were totally 180 degrees opposite the Pharisees, the scribes, the elders, the chief priests, and everybody else in every sense of the word. The complete antithesis, the complete opposite of the Jewish religious polity. The Pharisees were Jewish nationalists who hated Roman rule and all those who sided with Rome. They hated them. They despised them. And yet, they're working together to try to find something, one word, anything they could find. My goodness, to take out the Lord. And you have to keep in mind that by their own positions and divisions, the Pharisees, Sadducees, all of them, and Herodians, absolutely despised and hated each other. They had absolutely nothing, zero in common except to plot to kill Jesus. They had nothing in common and nothing that would bring them together on anything except to plot the death of Jesus Christ. And in this is fulfilled the saying that we're familiar with, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. It's fitting here. Their hatred for Christ was infinitely greater than their hatred for each other. And that's a monumental reality. I can't even wrap myself around, because he did nothing to warrant this. But behind the scenes is the higher battle between the forces of evil, the devil in his demonic realm, and the Father and the holy angels. Behind all this is something so far greater than you and I could even comprehend. Not to mention the wonderful and marvelous sovereignty of the plan of the Father. This was all a part of God's plan. Every bit of it. The amount of hatred they manifested towards each other and towards the Lord was almost unimaginable. They couldn't stand each other, but yet they hated Christ worse than they hated each other. And so much so, they were ready to become friends, even if it was for the moment. How many in the church, in the so-called church, fit this description? How many people visit churches feigning themselves to be righteous men and women, boys and girls, whose entire motive is the destruction of the leadership within the church, or of the credibility of the work itself, which in most cases accomplishes the same thing? We can't literally or physically, well, sometimes we can't, sometimes people do. You know, they send in feigned people, feigning righteousness for the purpose of destroying men. That's why we always have to be on guard, because they keep coming. And sometimes more than others. They, you know, a lot of these men, they establish a ministry, but they have this ridiculous notion that everybody in church is there for the right reason and everybody loves the Lord and loves me. Now, you better wake up. That's never been true, and it's not true now. It's never been true. The church has always been a remnant. It will always be a remnant. And everybody there who is outside of the remnant of God is an enemy of God. And if they're God's enemies, they're enemies of you and that church body. And they're going to do everything they can through infiltration, instigation, inflammation, whatever, to try to destroy the work. They're trying to do it. They're not doing it. They're not there by accident. They're there for a reason. I pointed to many devils. What are you here for? And they're laughing and giggling. They know why they're there. They're trying to take the work out. They're doing the work of their father, the devil. Nothing's changed. Nothing at all. How many people visit churches feigning themselves to be righteous, men and women, boys and girls, whose entire motive is the destruction of the leadership within the church or of the credibility of the work itself? I mean, I've heard good churches be ruined because of some person they hired who turned out to be a child molester or someone who was a thief or whatever. You know, the hiring process was either lax or these people were too cheap to pay for the background investigation. I mean, this is ridiculous. There's no accountability. People just do whatever they want to do. People can hide in that particular situation. And I don't care how good a pastor you are. Once that kind of stigma is on your work, you're pretty much done or on the way done because no one's going to trust you. You have to be doubly, triply vigilant, and you have to set the lead. You have to take the fool down to the police station and have somebody film you taking down there doing cops. Bad boy, bad boy. We taking you to jail, and take the fool down to the station in handcuffs and say, this fool is going to jail. He did X, Y, Z in the church. You want him arrested. And then put the film up on YouTube. You might save yourself, and then they hear you. You want people to see you don't play with that stuff. The problem is a lot of these pastors, they start playing. They hear things happen. They go, well, they better not say anything. You better say a lot of things. You better be at the forefront of every single judicial action in your so-called watch. You better be there. You better let people fear God knowing you on the spot. You're not going to tolerate that garbage. You're going to do what you can not to let it in the first place. And if it pops up to any degree, you're going to smack it down like a whack-a-mole for the sake of the church and for the sake of your reputation. And more important than that, for the sake of the lost who are watching everything you do. How many people purposely visit a church to destroy it? I know people have done it. It's nothing new. The idea that people don't do it is stupid. Anyone who believes people come to church, I've seen a man punch a preacher in the face on television. In a receiving line. So I ain't got no receiving line. For what? He was welcoming visitors to the church right up in the front of the church on television. And some whacked out whack job where I'm looking like somebody, you know, injecting him with speed, went up to and punched the pastor in the face for no reason. Punched the pastor in the face. And thankfully, he had some deacons there that had, you know, some takedown skills. They took that boy down. Next thing you know, you saw his feet doing like that on the way down. The way it should have been. The pastor, God bless him, he tried to make light of it, but really, there's nothing funny about that. People out there to do that. They're out there to destroy. They don't want the work of God going. They don't want the work of God going forward at all. They don't want it. How many hypocrites have infiltrated the Church of Jesus Christ to do the very same thing that these hypocrites did to the Lord? Plenty of them. Plenty of people do it. If they can't get what they want, then they turn antagonistic against those who won't give them what they want. There are a number of people who want true ministry destroyed. And they will come alongside of you and me. And they'll come alongside of you and with you and me. Whether or not for you or the Lord. They feign themselves to be righteous. They're not coming around and saying, I'm the devil. I'm here to take you out. They're, oh, no, we're best friends. Love, 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 preacher. And we love you. Put that knife back in your pocket then. Devil, They have an agenda in mind and is anything but godly. If, listen, I want to talk to all you preachers, those of you who are listening and those of you who are listening yet not listening. Maybe one day it'll click. Everybody in your church is not there for the right reason. And I know you know that. Now, I have never had this conversation with the person where I told them that they accepted it automatically. They always want to argue first. And they always want to give me some song and dance about how they're different and their ministry is unique. They didn't hear what I said. It's because of that that the enemy wants to come in to destroy it. If you are sincere and your work is unique, that's what they want to do. You're the very person you ought to be going, you'll be looking everywhere for the enemy because he's around there. He's always, in one sense, it's a good sign. Now, this is a bad sign. It's a good sign. It's a proof that your ministry is effective, because if it wasn't, the enemy wouldn't be wasting his time being bothered with it. He just let it go. But if it's effective, he wants to take it out. There's no guarantee he can do that. I mean, if you're on your job, you got the right people in place, the infrastructure is right and in place, usually that can be weeded out. Then you have to have the courage to kick people out of your church. The wrong people have to be ejected. You can't tolerate this nonsense. Now, of course, you might have three people in your church, but you have the blessing of God, because you cannot have all this devilment going on for the sake of what? Well, I know they're all devils. I'm patting them on the back, and one day I'm going to convert them. They're devils. They're trying to convert you and that weak membership you have. You wonder, where's all this mess coming from? You let the devil in the doggone church. What do you expect? He's going to come in as the devil. He's not going to come in as a saint. He comes, you know, disguised as an angel of light, but he's not going to stay that way. Our absolute willful ignorance in this matter is astonishing. How many leaders simply assume that everyone coming through the doors of their church really want to be there for the right reason? I don't know how many times I've had this comment, and they always want to argue. Well, Pastor, you don't understand. You know what? I don't know nothing. What you call me for then? Leave me alone. I just hang up on, just, you know, I got enough things on my mind to be dealing with. I don't want to be dealing with someone who already knows everything. You'll find out, some of you are going to have to find the hard way. You think you got it. You ain't got nothing going on. It has been on since the foundation of the world. You just one little peg in a pretty big place. One little fish in a mighty big sea of other fishes and whales and sharks and octopus and everything else. So you ain't doing nothing so significant that heaven and earth has got to stop to make sure that, you know, you're so unique the angels are taking Polaroids every move you make. And the, you know, the 24 elders and the cherubim and seraphim got their Nikons and they're filming you. Man, you ain't none of us that important at all. And if Paul was as alone as he said he is, certainly you are, if you think you're that important. But the idea that everyone comes to the doors is there for the right reason, that's absurd. I've never believed it, because people are humans. You know, I mean, unless you just simply dismiss the whole, maybe you're one of these folk that dismiss the whole idea of true good and evil. Maybe you're part of the new paradigm mentality where everyone is good, no matter how rotten they are coming through the door. You think you have some magical formula to thread them through and to manipulate them in time to see the good. You know, you need to see the carnage that you allow going on in the fellowship before you start worrying about this one person. The one person is not more important than that whole church body. No devil coming running roughshod is important so much so that you have to allow him or her to run roughshod over the church body because you're so full of yourself, you think you can change. So you can't change nobody. And even if you did, it still ain't of the Lord. You did it. God don't want them people in the first place. You want them there. Make me wonder about what your motive is. There are many people feigning themselves to be righteous who will destroy you, and the first chance they get, they're going to do it. And only a naive fool, really, a naive and a fool is pretty much the same, believes otherwise. Only someone who's naive believes, I just don't believe it. You don't have to. You just keep on living. Keep on living. We better wake up in the ministry. And I'm afraid a lot of folk are just tired asleep. They're not awake. Stop acting as if everyone is on the side of the Lord and on our side. It's not true. And it never has been true. And if they did it to the Lord and they did it to the apostles, who are you and I? They did it to the greater. What do you think they're going to do to us? All you need to do, every Sunday you have church, listen to me. I got it, what Paul's saying. I understand what he was saying. He told Timothy, you know, if you do the things I tell you, you'll deliver yourself for them to hear you. You have to deliver yourself. Above all, above everybody, you have to make sure you're straight. Every Sunday, every other day that you get up and teach that Bible, you teach that Bible exactly the way God said it. Let the consequences come. They are irrelevant. They are irrelevant to the purposes of why God puts you where you are. You get up there and you teach that Bible hard, heavy, hot, straight, and let the chips fall where they may. And we're going to see in this chapter, Master, we know that thou sayest and teach rightly. They said he's a straight shooting teacher. That's what it means. He's a straight teacher. And they're trying to take him out by calling him, you are a straight teacher. Man, you teach that word straight, and trying to take him out at the same time. How many people said it about me? Man, you teach that Bible straight, brother. You straight with the word. Or one man before he died, you slinging that Bible. And now he in wherever he is, he's still slinging that word. You a straight teacher. You're not telling me nothing. I don't already know that the benefit was for you. You know, but that, you know, you do what you want because you're all grown. These hypocrites deliberated or convened a council together and planned a scenario they thought would place Jesus into a trap with his words so that he could be rejected by the Jewish people and arrested by the Roman authorities. They thought they're all deliberate. Yeah, we got that. Yeah, the one over in chapter 19 didn't work. You know, well, we got it. You know, at first you don't succeed. Try again. So keep trying. Oh, we got one now. You can't get out of this one. And whatever you do, don't let him ask you a question with a question. When you ask a question, give it in such a way he has a demand and answer. And if you notice, when they ask this question about taxes, he does the same thing. He keeps doing the same thing. He says, show me a coin. Okay, well, we got him now. Well, whose superscription? Whose printed image is on the coin? It's Caesar. We got him. Yeah. Love, you know, fist bumping and high and low five and, you know, chest dumping. He said, run up to Caesar, thing to be Caesar. Oh, man, got us again. When the council, they were astonished. They left him alone. I mean, it was nothing left. They just went on back to the sand. He just said, look, we can't mess with this man. We can't foil him. We can't fool him. Like one man said, never man spake like this man. Are you also deceived? Never man spake like this man. This man's speech is out of this world. I mean, look, enough of this. There's nothing we can do. No man has ever spoken like this man has spoken before. I think for that one brief glimpse, and maybe afterward, he finally understood the divine. He understood now he was dealing with God the Son and not just any man. They went on the edge, oh, you also of Galilee, you also deceived, you also. They didn't get it. I bet he was still thinking, you know, and you just did, you gotta go yourself and be quiet. Get to hear for your dog on something, sit up there like some pompous windbag, like Jabba the Hutt, you know, talking that noise. Go listen to him for yourself. You'll find out. Well, here was his plan. This had to do with paying taxes to Rome. Paying the poll tax was the most obvious sign of submission to Rome. In AD 6, Judas of Galilee led a revolt against the first procurator because he took a census for tax purposes. Boy, this sounds so familiar. Zealots claimed the poll tax was God-dishonoring and a badge of slavery to the pagans. The trap, then, was to put Jesus into the position where he would either alienate a major part of the population or else lay himself open to a charge of treason. Either way, it's a lose-lose situation. So they thought. They thought they had the plan. But the plan is not man's, it's God. They thought they had him. We got him in a situation where we know whatever we ask him, he's done. He's done. So they go about to get from Jesus some remark which could be turned into an accusation against him. And this is why you have to be very, 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 very careful to always answer questions with scripture, because your words can easily be used against you if someone has it in for you. You know, they do it. Someone said, well, Harley, I heard you say thus and so. I said, I never said that. Well, Harley said, no, Harley didn't say that. I said, I don't know where y'all got that from. I never said that. People are like, "What?" I said, when did this conversation ever take place? Well, you said it like, I wasn't even working that. That wasn't even around. What are you talking about? People just make stuff up. I don't think there was any ill intent, but then again, I ain't taking no chance. I never said anything like that. I wasn't even working that day. Remember, I am part-time. I wasn't there, you know, long enough to say that. I wasn't working. You, I don't know what you're talking about. They try to get, you know, they all looks innocent. But, you know, when you're God's man, I don't care where you're at, you got to be on guard, because it's not always innocent. They want to discredit you. The devil isn't only in the church. The devil's on the job. The devil's in the street. The devil's in many homes. The devil's all over the place. And he wants to discredit you any way he can. And so when you're surrounded by wolves, you got to be a sheep. And you have to be smarter than a serpent. You have to be on guard. When they say things you know are wrong, rebuke them and move on. Get out the way. Don't get yourself caught up, because they're going to use, you know, when they start making stuff up, that's one thing. But I don't want to give anyone a reason, you know, to say, well, Harley said this. No, he didn't. I'm very careful what I say around people. I don't care if it's someone in the store. Like I told you when I went over to Jack in the Box to get my free burrito, my free breakfast burrito. I want y'all to listen to this nonsense. I want to listen to say Pastor Howard is nuts. You better hear what I'm saying then. I got my coupon. My wife took it out to pay for it. I said, yeah, I want to try one of these things. They've been talking about how great their food is, and I haven't had much Jack in the Box food in a while. So I went, got the coupon. This ain't it. And I went up to the counter. You know, and I said, all right, you got a egg and chorizo burrito for $2.99. And here's a coupon that says I get one free of equal or lesser value. So I want the steak and egg burrito. And he says, no. I said, excuse me? I said, this coupon says yes. And I read it to him. And I said, buy one chorizo and egg burrito and get a second of equal or lesser value free. The steak and egg, or the steak and chorizo burrito is $2.99 and the steak and egg burrito is $2.99. So I want the free steak and egg. And he said, no. I said, can you read? I said, read this coupon. Read it. I want you to read it. And he says, I said, so you understand the English language, don't you? I said, now, that's what this says. Now, off to the side, two people are watching me. I know who these people are. And, you know, after about another minute, I said, look, now there's no question about this coupon. No question. So what is your problem? Then he said, well, sometimes the computer doesn't honor those coupons. I said, well, the only way you're going to know it is to punch in that code right here. Now, I didn't say it that loud. I'm, you know, being being dignified when I'm outside. I'm just emphasizing for, you know, in the sermon. But no, that's what this, punch the code and you'll know. He punched it and it worked. Then the gentleman looked at me and said something to the effect, he said, you know, you say some very interesting things, Pastor. Pastor, who are you? And I'm like, who is this man here? He said, yeah, that's good to see you again, Pastor. I know this man to this day. He never introduced himself. I don't recall ever seeing him. But he was talking to me like we've been having fellowship forever. I know this man from the moon. Now, whether he saw the television program or not, I don't know. I've never seen him in any of the churches I can recall, unless, you know, years ago. It could be, I pastored churches for a while, so he could have been someone I was sitting around the front row with. I don't know. Well, he never introduced himself, but it was kind of strange because the first thing I thought was, I hope I didn't say or my character was in any way blaspheming God, which it wasn't. I just wanted to make sure that I keep myself in a way before the watching world that does not bring disrepute upon the Lord. And that's happened a number of times throughout the years where I'll say something, people come up to me and, you know, let's say the pastor, I knew you were a child of God. I'm like, I don't want to say anything to blaspheme the Lord. I don't want to say anything that anyone can say Christ isn't real or can't be trusted. I'm just saying, man, look at the coupon and do your doggone job. I'm hungry. I gotta get out of here. Give me my burrito, man. And stop playing around. It might have been for that man watching. I don't know. But I left that jack-in-the-box in fear and trembling. I, Lord, I don't want to say anything. I, you know, if it came to letting him have the burrito, I'd let him have it. If that's what it takes, I don't want to say anything that blasphemes you. And the interesting thing is, I turned around, that guy was gone. And where'd he go? I went, nah. I think about Hebrews. Nah, they can't. Nah, I don't. Where'd he go? I don't know. Let me get in this car and get out of here. Had me scared all day long. You gotta be careful how you answer folk. You don't know what you can't go to church la 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 and all that and then get on blankety 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 and a blankety blankety. No, you can't do that. Well, you can, but your James says your religion is vain. In other words, it don't mean nothing. So I'm very conscious. I'm conscious every purposely. It's on the front of my mind. I'm not going to do anything that's going to give any of the enemies of God a reason to blaspheme. They can blaspheme with 100 different people, but they ain't going to do it with me. Because when the opportunity comes, I tell them about the look. You know, the Lord says this and this, and that's just the way it is. And they can't say what you say. They just sit there and watch and listen. Your words could be easily used against you. You think the Lord wasn't aware of this? He was very much aware of that. And so here they come. They nuzzling up to the Lord, nuzzling up, be like a disciple. Then they pop out and they ask him, they who? The spies. The ones who feigned themselves to be just men. They ask him, say, Master. Oh, Master, Master, Master. We know that thou sayest and teachest right. You better watch them folk. Watch them like a hog. With a Reverend, brother, pastor, doctor, pastor, I'm just so glad you teach them. You better put a mark on that one right there. Put two or three of them with some stars and stripes. Put a mark on that one right. Keep your eye on that one. Reverend, doctor, brother, pastor, you such a great teacher, the man of God. I'm so glad that you watch that one. Listen, preacher, put that one at the top of your list. The one is always yapping all the time about how wonderful you are. Put him on the top of the list. Whatever devil you got, put him on top of that one. Or at least tied. Have a watch list. Watch the people because you better keep an eye on them. Say, nah, I ain't going. Well, you do what you want. You grown. You're a fool too. Master, we know that thou sayest and teachest rightly. Neither acceptest thou the purse of any, but teachest the way of God truly. Oh, listen to this rubbish. Listen to this nonsense. Notice how these wicked hypocrites, these spies, these fake righteous approach Jesus. It's incredible that knowing that Jesus performed miracles and had continually demonstrated the ability to read the thoughts of the hearts of these religious leaders over and over again, that they're still going to try this con game. They're still going to try it. They're going to try to trap him in his words, as if to say he had no means of knowing what they were doing. Here's a preamble. One writer called it the long preamble, right? Master, we know that thou sayest and teachest rightly. Neither accepted thou the person of any man, but teachest the way of God. Blah, blah, blah. They didn't believe a single word of that. Not one single solitary word of that. They didn't believe any of it. Because if they did, they would have been falling down before him and worship him as God the Son and been his true disciple. They didn't believe a word of it. They approached Jesus with this introduction, which was designed to force him to answer the question, since on the surface they recognize him as a teacher. Oh, master, master, teacher, teacher, pastor, pastor, teacher, master, teacher. We know that you teach the word right. Yes, you do. You say the truth. You just a truth-telling, straight-talking, truth-shooting teacher, rooting. I'm a rooting this, tooting this, straight-shooting this Bible teacher there is. You better put check marks, X's, O's, squares, lights, neons, those little finger things that point like that. You better make a separate list for that one person. You got the FBI most wanted list. Put him up there first. Put him there right. And if it's a sister, put her there too. They did it to place him in a position where he was forced to answer their question or questions. And he did it, well, since we publicly recognize you as a great teacher, then you have to answer our questions, master. That's that trap of flattery. And see, now someone says that to us, we're like, we getting big. Yeah, I am that person. I've always, you know, pop. Many recognize or fail to recognize the hypocrisy of flattery. Allow their heads to become rather puffed up like a blimp, and therefore they fall right into the trap of the enemy. He's always out there. You know good and well that the only reason why you know anything about anything spiritual is because of the Lord, not in spite of the Lord. If it wasn't for the Lord, you wouldn't know your right hand from your left. So when they start putting a you praise on, you better just get that little valve. Keep that valve open so the stuff comes in one side and it just gets valved out the other. Will they be going, where's the switch? We got to plug in the, like a little basketball valve. Where's the hole? We can't plug in the flattery. You don't have one. They look and they, where's it? I don't know. You're a great teacher. He didn't blow up. You handsome. I like your radio program. You look good on television. Definitely you can watch that person. You speak at the truth. What else is new? They can't find the valve. They're like poking around like a person, like some of these trainees trying to find a vein on a person's arm. They got 8,000 holes looking like a drug addict. You get arrested for something. Cop looking, you got all these track, not track, but I just have a blood test. Yeah, right, get them, oh, come on. Throw you in the back of a car because some orderly in some hospital, you know, couldn't find your blood vein. You got 87 track marks looking like some kind of a junkie. They're looking to try to find a way to get in you and me. Let's look more specifically at the flattery. First word out their mouth, master. Master. That means teacher, chief teacher, the teacher. They recognize him as such, and in this case, they were using flattery. The titles probably used to refer to Jesus as the chief teacher. You're a great teacher, a great instructor. Isn't he? And then the fake, yeah, they're all in agreement. They had a little plan going. And the crowd, of course, being deceived, you got all the people acknowledging as they draw to everybody in. They said, we know that thou sayest and teachest rightly. We know you. We know that you are true, that you love a truth. You're a truthful man. And he was a straight truth teacher. Teacher. Boy, you're the rootin'est, tootin'est, straight shootin'est teacher we ever known. If they truly believed it, why didn't they follow him then? For real. All that flattery. Neither acceptest thou the person of any. In other words, it's not that Jesus didn't care for people, but that he showed no favoritism towards anyone. You are unbiased. All this flat, you're a great, great, straight shooting teacher. You are a straight, true teacher. And you are completely unbiased. And your word is right. It's down. It's solid. Soft. It's everything. You teach every verse. You teach verse by verse. Lord, you got it. Master, yeah. Everybody, yeah, you know. He respected no one's face. I mean, he was so unlike the people asking the question. The Pharisees, the scribes, all those roaches were all favorable and favoritism to everybody. All the religious leaders, all of them were just a bunch of roaches. They just favored everybody. He was not partial to anyone. That's the thought. When Jesus spoke the truth, it was without any partiality. And they ought to know because he was blasting the living daylights out of them. What he said to one, he said to all. If this Pharisee was wrong, he was wrong. And if the other was wrong, another said he got them too. He taught the truth about God to all without regard to anything that reflected partiality. But of course, they didn't believe a word of it because if they did, once again, they would have been his disciples. They didn't believe it. They just said it. Because they're trying to get him. They're trying to flat him, trying to catch him off guard. Now, you know, it's impossible to trick the Lord. But it's very possible to trick us. Very possible. Because we're human beings. And we have the propensity to fall in so many areas. Listen, a lot of folk, this is this particular thing or that particular thing or this, but it may not be their weakness, so they may not even care about it. But that pride might, that might be the one. That might be the very thing that takes you down. It's amazing. But teach us the way of God truly. You are a teacher of the way to God and of God according to what your teachings bring people to God. They didn't believe a word of it. Listen to this. They said everything true about the Lord, but they didn't believe any of it. It was all feigned. It was all hypocritical. They didn't believe it. People do this all the time. Oh, you teach the word, blobbity, 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 yakety, yakety, woofity, woofity, liebity, lie. It's all a lie. They keep saying it. Oh, you did. But they never respond to it. Immediately and promptly. They just keep saying it. And if it isn't me, it'll be the next guy. And the next guy. And they got 87,000 teachers they lie to every time they open their mouth. And what's consistent with every one of them is that they never respond the right way to what we teach them. One man told me a long time ago, before I cut him off, I got you and about 13 other pastors I go to for counsel. Well, why don't you follow what we tell you then? Why do you need 14? You don't need a single, do you have a, I ain't been in church in 14, you need to be born again. The church of me? You got a congregation of pastors on call? You cut this nonsense off here. Be messing my reputation up with this nonsense. This is insane. We just want to pimp me and others. I got that big old giant chair. I'm going to cut that man. If you bug me again, I'll speak your name out publicly. That way you'll know not to mess with me. I don't be playing that stuff. You are a teacher of the way of God and of God according to truth. They said when Jesus taught the people about God and the way to and of God, he was completely truthful and accurate. But they didn't believe a word of it. They said all the right words, but they believed not one bit of it, because if they did, they would have followed him as his disciples without any question. One writer said, thus their statements, though actually true of Jesus, covered bitter hatred. Their kind words were as deceitful in their purpose as the kiss of Judas. Mm-hmm. Exactly. We act like people don't do this. They do it all the time. What are you talking about? I've had it happen to me, and many others have it happening to them. Pastors call me and tell me all that, and especially those who I warned them earlier about everybody in your church ain't. I love these guys. You know, I tell them, everybody in your church ain't what you. That's okay. Now I gotta go, but I know eventually you'll call me back. Yeah, you're right. I told you. That's when I really. I ain't gonna say I told you. You dog, right? I'm gonna say I told you so. Because you have a tendency to act like you were never told. I don't understand why it is that. I told you it was going to happen. Remember the conversation on such and such a date? Number of reasons, not a service. You know, get back on that phone. About you dropped off. Yeah, you clicked that little button. I dial them back. What you hang up on me for? People need to quit that foolishness. I want you to know we had. Stop acting like the conversation never took place. You ain't that smart on your best day. I know what you're doing. And I says, I'm only going to get worse. Didn't you just experience the very thing I told you before? That I told you it's going to happen. Hey, you don't know my church and blah. And we this. How long have you been pastor? About 6 seconds? Keep living. We think we got, if we put the right model up there and the right apparatus and all that, it's going to work. The only apparatus that works is this book I'm holding up called the Bible. And if you ain't teaching it, whatever you're teaching is absolutely wrong. Doesn't have a ghost of a chance to doing the will of God. But it will accomplish the will of the devil for sure. This is the utter hypocrisy of flattery. And we're done with this. People who are insincere, no matter what their claim of belonging to God, can and do say all the right words to you about the Lord, about you, about the church, about this, but they prove that they do not believe them, because if they did, then why did they not follow the Lord? If they actually believe what they say they believe, why aren't they following what they believe? Think with me. If they truly believed the things they claim, then doesn't it make common and clear sense that if one truly believed the words they say they believe, that they would follow them? Makes sense to me. If you really believe all that, then you ought to be a disciple. You'll be in the front of the line. And this is why those who flatter can say and do the right things and say the right words and oftentimes will agree with you pretty much with everything and make you feel that you are both on the same page when in fact they are not following the truth whatsoever. And chances are you are being primed for a fall. Primed for the takedown. You just, here's a slippery slope. sit right in front of you. Usually you don't know you're on black ice until after you get on black ice. And I've driven on black ice. I've driven on streets where the road was nice and clear, and then the car just started going like this. And I wasn't steering like that. It just went like zip. And the more you try to fight it, you're just making the car go faster and spin in direction. I've watched it happen actually in Virginia. I've actually was driving on the street and there were warnings of it. And the road looked just like a normal tar road. The car was in front of me and then a van. And all of a sudden it went like zip. And immediately, you know, our inclination, step on the brake. Wrong. Slow that car down as soon as possible. Don't jam on that brake. Next thing I know, I'm doing the sideways shuffle. But that van was banging like ding, 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 ping. You know, and I was able to kind of slide and then the car slid diagonally straight almost to the angle. And I just hold on to the wheel. Lord, help me, Lord Jesus. Thank you, Lord, for everything. I pray if I sin this. And next thing, the car slid and then it got back on the street again. And then I proceeded to drive 5 miles an hour for about 5 miles. Then I looked at other cars in front of me when I saw that they weren't, you know, doing the slip or the slide, the ping pong shuffle. And I said, I think it's okay, because I was watching the car in front of me. You know, oftentimes we don't know what's out there. We don't know. See, these spies thought they could, that Jesus could be fooled by flattery. He could not, but you and I can. Oh, you this, you ain't nothing like that. We ain't nothing. Always err on the side of humility. You ain't nothing like what they tell us we are. Because the same people that sing your praise today will blaspheme your presence and your name tomorrow. Sometimes do it in the same day. They won't even wait. The friends you had today, you won't have tomorrow. They'll leave you high and dry. They won't even acknowledge your existence. All they want is gimme, gimme, gimme. To give nothing in return. They're not your friends. They're not there for the right reason. Well, they use a lot of that flattery, and it still gets you nowhere, except in trouble. We'll pick up at this point next time. Lord, thank you again for the clarity of the truth, for your word. Father, may we not be led astray, because the definite propensity is in us as human beings, Lord. Father, may we follow your example, the example of your son, not to be biased, show favoritism, but Lord, to be those who are true and trustworthy. Father, be glorified through our lives, through the lives of every saint. Bless the bread and cup tonight in Jesus' name. Amen.